In 1377, the Pope Gregory XI did indeed re-enter Rome and die there, but the French cardinals split off from the others at the election of his successor, and two popes were elected, one at Avignon and one at Rome. This split, the Great Schism, lasted from 1378 to 1418. Each pope cursed the other and put all his supporters under an interdict. Such was the state of Christianity, and such were now the custodians of the teachings of Jesus of Nazareth. All Asia was white unto harvest, but there was no effort to reap it. When at last the Church was reunited and missionary energy returned with the foundation of the Order of the Jesuits, the days of opportunity were over. The possibility of a worldwide moral unification of East and West through Christianity had passed away. The Mongols in China and Central Asia turned to Buddhism. In South Russia, Western Turkestan, and the Ilkhan Empire, they embraced Islam. 5a. In China, the Mongols were already saturated with Chinese civilization by the time of Kublai. After 1280, the Chinese annals treat Kublai as a Chinese monarch, the founder of the Huan dynasty, 1280 to 1368. This Mongol dynasty was finally overthrown by a Chinese nationalist movement, which set up the Ming dynasty, 1368 to 1644, a cultivated and artistic line of emperors, ruling until a northern people, the Manchus, who were the same as the Qin whom Genghis had overthrown, conquered China and established a dynasty which gave way only to a native republican form of government in 1912. It was the Manchus who obliged the Chinese to wear pigtails as a mark of submission. The pigtailed Chinaman is quite a recent figure in history. With the coming of the Republic, the wearing of the pigtail has ceased to be compulsory, and many Chinamen no longer wear it. 5b. In the Pamirs, in much of eastern and western Turkestan, and to the north, the Mongols dropped back towards the tribal conditions from which they had been lifted by Genghis. It's possible to trace the dwindling succession of many of the small Khans who became independent during this period almost down to the present time. The Kalmuks in the 17th and 18th centuries founded a considerable empire, but dynastic troubles broke it up before it had extended its power beyond Central Asia. The Chinese recovered eastern Turkestan from them about 1757. Tibet was more and more closely linked with China and became the great home of Buddhism and Buddhist monasticism. Over most of the area of western Central Asia and Persia and Mesopotamia, the ancient distinction of nomad and settled population remains to this day. The townsmen despise and cheat the nomads. The nomads ill-treat and despise the townsfolk. 5c. The Mongols of the great realm of Kipchak remained nomadic and grazed their stock across the wide plains of South Russia and Western Asia adjacent to Russia. They became not very devout Muslims, retaining many traces of their earlier barbaric shamanism. Their chief Khan was the Khan of the Golden Horde. To the west, over large tracts of open country, and more particularly in what's now known as Ukraine, the old Scythian population, Slavs, with a Mongol admixture, reverted to a similar nomadic life. These Christian nomads, the Cossacks, formed a sort of frontier screen against the Tatars, and their free and adventurous life was so attractive to the peasants of Poland and Lithuania that severe laws had to be passed to prevent a vast migration from the ploughlands to the steppes. The serf-owning landlords of Poland regarded the Cossacks with considerable hostility on this account, and war was as frequent between the Polish chivalry and the Cossacks as it was between the latter and the Tatars. In the Empire of Kipchak, as in Turkestan, almost up to the present time, while the nomads roamed over wide areas, a number of towns and cultivated regions sustained a settled population which usually paid tribute to the nomad Khan. In such towns as Kiev, Moscow, and the like, the pre-Mongol Christian town life went on under Russian dukes or Tatar governors who collected the tribute for the Khan of the Golden Horde. The Grand Duke of Moscow gained the confidence of the Khan and gradually, under his authority, obtained an ascendancy over many of his fellow tributaries. In the 15th century, under its Grand Duke, Ivan III, Ivan the Great, 1462-1505, Moscow threw off its Mongol allegiance and refused to pay tribute any longer in 1480. The successors of Constantine no longer reigned in Constantinople, and Ivan took possession of the Byzantine double-headed eagle for his arms. He claimed to be the heir to Byzantium because of his marriage in 1472 with Zoe Palaeologus of the imperial line. This ambitious grand dukedom of Moscow assailed and subjugated the ancient Northman trading republic of Novgorod to the north, and so the foundations of the modern Russian Empire were laid and a link with the mercantile life of the Baltic established. Ivan III didn't, however, carry his claim to be the heir of the Christian rulers of Constantinople to the extent of assuming the imperial title. This step was taken by his grandson, Ivan IV, Ivan the Terrible, because of his insane cruelties, 1533-1584. Although the ruler of Moscow thus came to be called Tsar, or Caesar, his tradition was in many respects Tatar rather than European. He was autocratic after the unlimited Asiatic pattern, and the form of Christianity he affected was the Eastern court-ruled Orthodox form, which had reached Russia long before the Mongol conquest by means of Bulgarian missionaries from Constantinople. To the west of the domains of Kipchak, outside the range of Mongol rule, a second center of Slav consolidation had been set up during the 10th and 11th centuries in Poland. The Mongol wave had washed over Poland, but had never subjugated it. Poland wasn't Orthodox, but Roman Catholic in religion. It used the Latin alphabet instead of the strange Russian letters, and its monarch never assumed an absolute independence of the emperor. Poland was, in fact, in its origins, an outlying part of Christendom and of the Holy Empire. Russia never was anything of the sort. 5D. The nature and development of the empire of the Ilkhans in Persia, Mesopotamia, and Syria is perhaps the most interesting of all the stories of these Mongol powers, because in this region, nomadism really did attempt, and really did to a very considerable degree succeed in its attempt, to stamp a settled civilized system out of existence. When Genghis Khan first invaded China, we're told that there was a serious discussion among the Mongol chiefs whether all the towns and settled populations shouldn't be destroyed.